A transparent pistol loaded with a clip full of bullets rotates slowly as puzzle pieces accumulate to compose a photograph of a friendly-faced middle-aged woman. Pauline Collins as Dr. Catherine Kate Kendall. A rotating knife. Oliver Ford Davies as snowy-haired Colonel Jeffrey Reese. A syringe. Written on puzzle pieces. Kenneth Cranham, Jonathan Firth, Susan Hampshire, Claire Holman, James Wilby, Leah Williams. Sparkling cyanide. A beautiful raven-haired woman and a middle-aged man in a bow tie are driven up outside a swanky London club. Press photographers snap them as they get out. The man and the woman, George and Rosemary Barton, climb steps towards the doors of the club, where a bespectacled blonde assistant waits.
Great debut for the boys, stunning hat trick. Couldn't be happier. Next stop, the Premiership.
Get Fears in here. I don't want him playing up in front of the cameras.
A flash sports car pulls up and a man gets out.
Cheers.
How do you feel?
The team's pleased, George's pleased, we're focused and ready for the weeks ahead.
How are you
working for the new boss? Come on, excellent, what can I say? He's a man's genius.
What about this? Gambling
problem.
George approaches a sharp-suited man inside the club.
My new striker has got a couple of goals. Very pleased with himself. He has a tendency to push the boat out. Keep an eye on him, will you?
Hey, boss.
Speak of the devil.
How's like the hat-trick?
Next time, don't leave us alone in the game.
Carl Fizz Fitzgerald strides off. Rosemary looks troubled.
Why anybody has to pay out so much money for so much aggravation? Women drinking, red cards on the pitch. If he steps out of line, he's out. Genius or no genius. And I'll make sure nobody else buys it.
Rosemary. Iris. You look stunning. If you weren't my sister, I'd be quite jealous.
Aren't you quite well, dear? You look so pale.
You too, darling.
The press collar another couple as they arrive.
Well, without Sir George Barton, the winter day wouldn't have been possible.
Mrs. Faraday, you and the Minister of the Last, can I show you them?
We need people like George Barton, people with vision, people with a desire to look forward. So all I can say is 3-0.
Inside.
Excuse me, I'll just see if everything's in order.
The blonde PA, Ruth Lessing, scurries off. The smartly dressed couple, Stephen and Alexandra Faraday, start for the stairs. Alexandra is sour-faced.
I know how you detest these people. Thank you for coming.
It's what wives do.
Alexandra, Stephen, come and join us. Have a glass of champagne. Rosemary, you already know, yeah?
So where's this great new pair of yours I've heard so much about?
Fizz, come and meet Mrs. Faraday.
Hello, pleased to meet you.
This is Mr. Stephen Faraday, her husband. He's an up-and-coming politician on the telly all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Great friend of the club.
Although he did keep us waiting till just short of the final whistle, Fizz did pull a hat-trick out of the bag and proved himself capable of justifying the fortune I paid for him. So, keep up the good work, son. To the club and its new striker.
Dancing.
She's very fragile, isn't she?
Who?
Rosemary.
Is she? I haven't noticed.
Fizz dances with Iris, George to Rosemary.
I've got to go to Hong Kong next week. Why don't you come with me? A few days in the Seychelles. Just the two of us.
I don't know, George.
A bit of time together.
Beautiful, slender Rosemary looks away uneasily. Craggy-faced old George addresses everyone at a table.
There's something else that I'd like to celebrate tonight. Well, it's not an anniversary as such, but to me, every day is celebrations. Rosemary changed my life. Sometimes I think I'm getting a bit soft. But Rosie is the love of my life. I'm endlessly amazed and grateful that she's taken on a monster like me. So I'd like you to all be upstanding and raise your glasses to Rosemary.
I don't know if you're supposed to drink to yourself or not.
Then drink to George.
Rosemary rises from her seat and clinks wine glasses with George.
To George.
They sip their drinks. The veins on Rosemary's neck stand out and she grimaces, suddenly unable to breathe.
What's wrong? Hey!
She collapses.
What is it? Stephen, Rosemary, darling, do something! Somebody!
Jowly George looks around desperately. Ruth looks terrified. A green suspension bridge over the Thames. The smart-looking Rees household stands in a salubrious area of West London. Inside, at the kitchen table, are 60-somethings Geoffrey and Kate. A shower of sparks shoots up from the dining room table as Geoffrey's young grandson Sam does a chemistry experiment.
You know I love them, but how long are Rebecca and Sam going to be here?
Well, we can't send them home to live on a building site.
I wasn't suggesting that.
Maybe the builders will pick up speed.
Well, about the time pigs fly. The clearest thinker in all this is Rebecca's husband. Couldn't have timed his trip to New York better if he tried. Unless, of course, he did try.
Do stop whinging. It'll keep us young to have them here.
Morning.
Oh, morning,
sweetheart.
Rebecca.
Looking forward to the zoo, Sam? Grandad and I are, aren't we, Grandad?
The what?
The zoo. We're going to the zoo.
You didn't tell me that.
Yes, I did.
So I can go shout at the builders.
Yes, do Sam good to get out in the fresh air, won't it?
Kate looks earnestly at Geoffrey, then goes through to another room.
Why did that phone ring?
We have two telephone lines.
Why?
Tell me, Sam, how are you at boiling eggs?
Absolutely, as soon as we can.
Who is it?
It's Hoffman. McCain wants to see us immediately.
That's fantastic. Can I have a go on it?
Not now. Grandad's busy.
Colonel Rees.
Geoffrey thumbs his mobile phone as he leaves the house carrying a briefcase. Kate, Rebecca and Sam sit at the dining table.
Daddy has an emergency. In army pensions.
Well, your father is indispensable.
Kate rises and goes to the kitchen phone.
Hello?
Hurry, make an excuse.
Westminster.
You'll have to keep Sam away from your computer.
It's fine. I installed a childproof lock before we left.
Where?
It's an electronic one. It's in the computer. Anyway, all the files are encrypted, so it's quite safe.
At the rear of a government building on Downing Street, they pass through a gate and descend a flight of steel steps. Balding with wispy white hair, Geoffrey prods buttons on an entry system, then waits. Kate looks at him.
Sometimes I think you do this on purpose.
Kate punches in the correct code, 65209. A buzzer goes as the doors are unlocked, and Geoffrey gestures politely for Kate to enter ahead of him. They stroll down a corridor.
I do wish McCain wouldn't root us through the back as if we were servants.
That's what we are.
So was James Bond.
I'll get this one.
He knocks on a door. They sit before McCain.
Last night a woman died in a West End club. Her name was Rosemary Barton. She was having dinner with her husband, some minor celebrities, footballer, and someone who interests us very much.
How did she die?
Collapsed. She hadn't been well, but she had a history of drugs and suicide attempts.
Rosemary chases pills down with wine.
5 years ago, she married...
A photograph.
George Barton.
Self-made multimillionaire.
You are so elegant.
Rosemary does her makeup.
So classy.
Moved up the social ladder when he married Rosemary.
If only.
There were several other people at the dinner. Rosemary's sister, Iris Marl. Personal trainer and style guru to actors, celebrities. Bit of a celebrity herself. Constantly photographed, linked with an endless stream of eligible bachelors.
I can't wait to see their faces when we tell them.
Iris.
What if I don't wear any knickers? Would the thought keep you revved up for later?
Lucilla Drake. Aunt who brought up Rosemary and Iris when their parents were killed in a car crash. At the moment, they were 8 and 5, respectively. Husband abandoned her 29 years ago. It's rumoured he's somewhere in Argentina.
I wouldn't dream of it.
Darling boy, it's been months since you've let me give you anything.
You've done more than enough for me.
She has a son, Mark.
Too much, in fact. I should start looking after you.
Bit of a playboy. He wasn't at the dinner party.
He's in his 30s.
Ruth Lessing. Barton's PA for the last 10 years. Knows more about him than anyone else, apparently. Lives alone. No personal liaisons. Edging towards 40. No pets.
You know Mr. Barton likes his champagne to be very cold, so please keep the ice buckets topped up. Also, should any member of staff offend him in any way, he must be replaced immediately. Is that understood?
Yes.
And the reason you are here today. Stephen Faraday.
Minister for Culture, Media and Sport.
Political high flyer with overweening ambitions and no connections.
His wife?
And his connection. Alexandra Lawrence. Her father was well placed in the party before he retired. Gave the Prime Minister a serious leg up. I've heard no rumours involving Faraday, but the press are digging. I want you to stay ahead of them.
What are we looking for?
Potential embarrassment to the government. Affairs, drugs, corruption, dubious friends. He's in line for serious promotion. But only if he's squeaky clean. Faraday's emailing you a copy of his appointments for the last 3 months, encrypted as usual. He'll be at home for the next hour. He's expecting you. You find the address in here. The slightest hint of trouble, and I want to be informed immediately. Clear?
What is it about politicians and football? Like magnets and iron filings.
You may be perfectly innocent.
No one in power is perfectly innocent. It's a contradiction in terms.
Outside.
So, who talks to Faraday, you or me?
He's a minister. He's used to abuse. Bad cop first. Anyway, I assume you'd rather I dealt with the emails.
And your whiz kid, Hoffman.
He's our whiz kid.
Could have fooled me.
So, what if Faraday has been up to something?
He'll deny it. The press will dig. The story will leak. McCain will spin it. PM will declare unconditional support. And 36 hours later...
Faraday will spontaneously resign.
Unless it's something really serious.
A Chaz?
Murder.
Jeffrey, this is England.
They stroll down Whitehall past tourists at Horse Guards Parade. Decorating a stately stone building, Bloomsbury GSHQ. Smiling to herself, Kate strides to a door guarded by a security camera. She pushes a buzzer and enters. She passes an employee as she strides purposefully down a corridor.
Hello, Anita.
She enters a spacious office area through wooden double doors.
Andy, I need you.
Sharp-suited with cropped black hair, stubbly 20-something Andy joins Kate in her office.
Andy, how are you today?
She hands him computer printouts.
McCain wants us to look at these. 3 months of diary appointments of Stephen Faraday, MP.
What are we looking for?
Potential scandal. Motivations?
Greed, lust, revenge.
Clues?
Lies, inconsistencies, repeating patterns.
Or maybe even something that constitutes a fact. Just to confound the critics. Quick as you can, Andy.
Geoffrey strolls along a street of well-appointed terraced houses in Kensington. He wears leather gloves and a beige overcoat and holds in one hand a small map book. As he goes to ring the doorbell of the Faraday house, Alexandra opens the door wearing a coat.
Yes?
I'm here to see the minister.
Stephen?
Darling, I didn't know you were going to Manchester.
I'm Colonel Rees, Minister McCain, sent...
Please, go in, I won't be a moment. But, we need to talk.
Ring me.
Not over the phone.
I shall be back on Thursday evening.
Alexandra gets into a waiting taxi and Stephen closes the door behind her with a look of mild disappointment. He goes inside to Geoffrey, who stands in the hallway.
5 minutes and then I'm to be off.
They climb stairs past large black and white framed photographs to a sitting room decorated with paintings and antiques.
What does McCain want to know?
If there is any cause for concern in last night's unfortunate incident.
A woman's dead, and I thought that's cause for concern.
I'm sure you know what he means.
Was I involved in any compromising way with any of the people at the dinner? Absolutely not.
Your reason for being there?
Barton invited me.
And your connection with Barton?
He wants to ingratiate himself with the government, fast-track himself to a knighthood. As Minister for Sport, I'm a logical conduit.
I assume you got something out of it.
Well, you don't believe in altruistic politicians. I'm a new minister. The more I'm seen to associate with the successful in the media, arts, sport, the higher my profile. and the faster I move on to a more significant department.
How well did you know Mrs. Barton?
My wife and I have met her a few times on similar occasions. It's a terribly tragic event, Colonel. But nothing to do with my wife or me. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Lucilla's with George in the airy kitchen of his enormous detached house in Hampstead.
Have a cup of tea.
She brings a tray.
Oh, Lucilla.
She sits down beside him.
We were everything to each other. Nobody's ever going to believe that. They'll say she was with me for my money.
But no, she had money of her own. She loved you.
Do you think she killed herself?
No, no, she stopped all that years ago. But she has seemed rather unhappy recently. She so wanted children.
Ruth enters.
The press want a statement.
I don't want to talk to them.
Let me give them a statement and they'll go away.
They never go away. I said no phone calls.
It's mine. Oh, darling.
I will not have your son in this house.
George starts for the door.
He wants to talk to you.
Not now.
He's coming over.
Not now.
I don't care what Barton says. I should be with you now.
He hangs up. He's clean-shaven, tall and slim, with mid-length brown hair. He looks wistful.
Rosie.
Oh, Kate, do you realise what the department budget cuts have really done to us? Cast us adrift in the hell of public transport. Crossing central London is a nightmare. I suppose there aren't riots in the streets.
Ah, stop whinging.
Faraday says he knew Barton professionally and Rosemary hardly at all.
Believe him?
All political scandals begin with denial. I wouldn't trust any of them as far as I could throw them. But as I was taking route at the bus stop, I did some old-fashioned ringing round. Everything McCain told us is confirmed, of course. Thought we should take a look at the footage from the club's internal security cameras.
There won't be any.
Of course there will.
What? Recording party time among the rich and famous.
Ah. Initial forensic report show no unidentified fingerprints. No hard evidence at all, really. You'll be in your element.
So, if it is murder, one of these is the murderer.
Faraday has his hair cut every other Thursday at 3:30.
Maybe he likes to look nice. He is in the public eye.
His hair looks grown out.
Could just be the photo. But let's assume it's not, because on the other Thursdays at 3:30, he has acupuncture. Now, does he look like a candidate for acupuncture?
No.
No. You see, it's exactly the sort of thing the press will get onto. Thank God they haven't got hold of these.
They will.
How?
Email.
It's encrypted.
I broke the code last night.
You did it again?
In under an hour. I've told security.
Can you hack into Faraday's bank account?
Geoffrey gives Kate a knowing look. A drop-top Jag cruises past Iris Miles' flat in Notting Hill Gate. Teary-eyed Iris sits up in bed.
No one could have a better sister. How could she kill herself? When she tried before, she didn't really mean it. Slashing her wrist, I mean, took an overdose of aspirin. She knew not to take paracetamol in case we didn't find her in time.
She stares off in thought, then looks up with a furrowed brow.
Why didn't she talk to me? Let me help.
Her sorrowful expression gives way to one of bristling anger and bitterness.
Unless someone killed her.
Bare-chested, Viz lays a consoling hand on her.
Don't even think it.
Iris starts to cry. Viz clasps her hands and kisses them tenderly. She hangs her head. Wimbledon, Lucilla Drake's house.
Do you remember when the girls first came to live with us? It was so good to them.
I knew what it was like to lose one parent. I couldn't begin to imagine what it would be like to lose them both.
She smiles.
You were a darling to share me.
They were lucky to have you.
She shakes her head. Ruth is on the phone.
500 white lilies. 500, yes. As soon as the body is released. Yes, you have our account details. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Andy sits at a computer at HQ. Jeffrey and Kate sit nearby as he goes through data.
Thursdays, 5:07 p.m. A ATM on West Kensington. Tokyo Gold Sushi Bar, a weekly order of £30.70.
Thursdays? How did you do that?
The schedules name the restaurants and clubs he normally frequents. Those lead to credit cards, then banks, then direct debit standing orders, and regular expenditures. If there was a regular order, there may be a regular address.
Can you track it down?
Yeah, give me a moment.
He brings up the Tokyo Gold webpage. Jeffrey works at a desk in a private office. Kate enters.
Every Thursday, Faraday paid for a regular delivery of sushi to a flat in Kensington.
Sushi who?
Sushi. Japanese food? Raw fish?
I know what sushi is. You said Susie.
I don't want to worry you, Jeffrey, but you aren't picking up everything I say these days.
That's because you mumble.
Can I go on? Right, this means he was up to something. Andy's tracking down the address where the sushi was delivered, and he's finding out from the landlord's register who rented it.
What about the pathology report? Why don't you go to the mortuary? Maybe coax out confidential information.
Why don't you go yourself?
Catherine.
What kind of a professional turns to jelly at the sight of a dead body?
A sensitive, caring one.
The flat was paid for by Rosemary Barton.
An affair. Oh, the PM will be pleased. Tell Faraday I'm on my way.
Flush electric gates open, allowing Kate into the grounds of the West London mortuary. A mortician lowers some bloody organs into a steel container beside a dead body.
What's my favourite troubleshooter snooping into this time?
Dead body, Henry. Rosemary Barton, mistress to one Stephen Faraday, Minister for Culture, Media and Sport.
Ah, scandal. Keeps us both in business. How's Geoffrey?
Fine.
Any time he'd like another tour of my facilities, I'd be only too happy to oblige.
How was the tox screen?
The police will bring you up to speed.
Oh, come on, Henry, be a pal.
I'm waiting for it to come back.
But you will ring me?
Along with the police. But I can tell you there are no bruises or abrasions. No element of force was used. Something toxic killed her. But even when I know what it is, I won't be able to say for certain whether it was suicide or murder.
But it was quick.
Yes. Not usual for someone who's made ineffectual attempts in the past.
He looks at her.
There is something else. She'd had an abortion recently. 10 days or so ago, by the looks of things. And she was on fertility treatment.
Kate's eyes wander as she mulls this over. She hangs up her surgical smock and makes a call on her mobile.
Jeffrey, news.
The Houses of Parliament. Jeffrey sits opposite Stephen in his office.
How did you find out? Rosemary and I found
out. It wasn't difficult.
Stephen knits his fingers together and frowns thoughtfully, his eyes roving.
I'll prepare a statement, talk to McCain. Plenty of politicians survive affairs.
The evidence points to unlawful death. Murder.
Stephen furrows his brow.
Oh, who would... God, poor Rosie.
How long had the affair been going on?
Jesus, I can't be a suspect.
How long had the affair been going on?
About 4 months.
Who ended it?
I did, 6 weeks ago.
Jeffrey considers.
Did Rosemary talk about wanting children?
Not mine. She and George have been trying for years.
She'd recently had an abortion.
Stephen looks shocked. He stares at Jeffrey and gasps.
Sorry. Well, she wouldn't have an abortion, even if it was mine. She wanted a child too much. No, George must have known about her. This must have been to do it. But...
He looks confused.
But to kill her?
Why would he do that?
He's the most ruthless, calculating man I've ever met. And believe me, in this world... Now, if George knew about Rosemary and me...
He shakes his head subtly.
What about your wife?
Stephen looks at Jeffrey.
What about her?
Did she know about Rosemary?
Stephen drops his gaze.
No.
Are you going to tell her?
Yes. I see her on Thursday.
If I were you, I wouldn't leave it that long.
Kate and Geoffrey watch as tousle-haired Sam, who's about 10, kicks a ball about in the back garden of Geoffrey's house.
The affair will hit the press.
And another government minister bites the dust. All right, Sam.
What time is Rebecca back?
Well, she's been to see the builders, and the roofers have promised to finish by the end of next week.
Oh, which only leaves the electricians, the plumbers, the central heating.
Poor old Sam. You must find all this very unsettling. And you'll probably adjust around about the time that they leave.
I'm not that slow.
That way you stayed with me all this time.
Stop fishing, Petal.
Do you remember the first time you took me home to meet your family? Your mother's face when she heard my flat vowels. You were brave to take me on.
As he leans in to kiss her, her mobile rings.
Mortuary.
Come on, Sam. Kick it back to me.
Sam does and slips over.
Right. Tox screen's back. Potassium cyanide. Lethal, fast-acting poison.
Murder, perhaps.
Sam boots the football and Geoffrey heads it. Kate and Geoffrey are alone in the open-plan kitchen dining room.
Well, my money's on Barton. If he knew about the affair or the abortion, then he'd have had a motive.
Faraday has a motive too, of course. If Rosemary threatened to go to the press about the affair or tell his wife...
Or if the baby was his and Alexandra knew about it, then she could be a suspect.
Oh, Barton and Faraday are quite enough to be getting on with.
I make it 11 suspects. Round that table were 4 staff, 7 guests and 1 dead woman. Maybe I'll go and talk to Iris. Sisters often confide in each other.
And if she and Rosemary didn't communicate?
Well, then it'll speak volumes.
I'll go and see Barton and then pay a visit to the nightclub. Meet me there?
Geoffrey picks up a noisy toy robot from the table and turns it off.
How long can we keep Rebecca in the dark?
Look, Kate, the children like you to be in school administration, me to be in army pensions. Why rock the boat now?
Absolutely. Save the truth for the obituaries.
Sorry to bring you round the back, Colonel. The press are all out front. They just won't leave Mr. Barton alone.
This must all be a terrible shock.
He's had a lot in his life.
How well did you know Rosemary?
She stayed away from George's business affairs, so we only really saw each other at formal social functions.
How did she and Mr. Barton get along?
That really was none of my business.
But you must have formed an opinion.
George loved his wife very much.
How would you describe Mr. Barton's temperament?
He believes things should be done properly.
So he has a temper?
He believes things should be done properly.
Can you think of any reason why anyone would want to kill Rosemary?
But I thought she...
He stares at her.
She had a history of suicide.
Yes. But we don't think it was suicide. Can you think of anyone?
Plain, bird-like Ruth shakes her head. Lucilla sits with Iris.
We must stay closer as a family now, look after each other. Rosemary thought of you as a second mother. I do too. I know that this is hardly the time to talk about money, but I am worried about my poor Mark. I do my best, but, well, he needs a little taking care of. I love you and I love Mark very much. I'd do anything for you. Thank you, dear. Where are you going?
I'm going to work. I will go mad if I stay here any longer.
Kate strolls up to the entrance of a large red brick leisure complex, Lotus Fitness. Inside, Iris takes her frustrations out on a weighted freestanding punch bag. She lands a powerful kick on it. It topples over, then rights itself again. Kate approaches and their eyes meet.
Iris Malm.
Yes.
I'm Kate Kendall. It's good of you to see me at such a difficult time.
I loved her.
They sit together at a table by the exercise machines.
Stephen Faraday? I mean, I know sex with George wasn't up to much, but Faraday, so smooth. Did George know? I don't know. Did your sister love Barbie? He made her feel safe. Did he love her? Everyone loved Rosemary. She had a big heart. When she inherited her fortune, I wasn't jealous.
Kate mouths, oh, and nods. She sits back.
Do you know the terms of her will?
No. You do stand a chance of profiting from her death.
What are you saying?
I'm a suspect. So you don't think it was suicide?
When Rosemary told me she was pregnant, I couldn't have been happier.
Oh, you knew?
She was over the moon, made me swear not to tell. I don't even think George knew. She'd had so many miscarriages, she wanted to wait until she was sure. I was so happy for her.
Iris stifles tears.
But that's why I know she couldn't have killed herself.
Did she tell you about the abortion?
Iris looks shocked and incredulous. George to Fizz on the footy pitch.
If the physio says you're fit, you're fit. Get on with it.
Fizz limps away toward Geoffrey, who's approaching with Ruth.
Actually, I'd like to see you later, Mr. Fitzgerald.
He's got another hour's training. You'll find him with the physio after.
George stands by himself. Fizz walks off as Ruth and Geoffrey approach George.
Thank you, Ruth.
And I'm hoping I might borrow Miss Lessing for an hour or two after we've finished. Do show me around the club where you all dine that night.
Yes, of course.
I'll phone the club. Let them know we're coming.
She walks away. George and Geoffrey sit in the empty stands.
So, it wasn't a suicide.
Why do you say that?
McCain's people wouldn't question me about suicide.
George lowers his eyes and scoffs.
McCain's tentacles are everywhere. If he ever writes a book... I loved it. I really loved her, Colonel. You can scratch me off the list.
Why would you be on it?
Aren't spouses and relatives always at the top? Basically, we had a good marriage.
Why would anyone want to murder your wife?
I have enemies. Could be to get at me.
Could you give me a list?
How long have you got?
I understand Mrs. Barton was on fertility treatment.
Oh. I don't want that coming out in the press.
Were you aware she'd been pregnant?
In the past?
Recently.
When she was killed?
No. She'd had an abortion.
George's eyes widen.
I'm sorry, I assumed you knew.
I had no idea.
She'd also been having an affair.
Who with?
Stephen Faraday.
George quickly takes his mobile from a pocket and hits a speed dial button.
Get McCain. Now.
Barton's going to the press. If you don't want this whole mess to bury you, Faraday, you get round to that football club and you grovel.
McCain hangs up. Stephen glances at his telephone receiver in annoyance, then hangs up too. He sighs, looks pensive for a moment, and makes a call. Geoffrey's with Fizz in the football club changing rooms.
I gather you have rather a reputation with the ladies.
I like them. So what?
But not Rosemary.
You've got to be joking. Not that she weren't attractive in a skinny kind of way, but Barton has strung up any bloke who went near her.
Were you aware of any family problems?
Well, it must have been. She topped herself.
Oh, we're ruling nothing out.
Murder? Barton killed his wife.
Why do you say that?
Well, it's always a spouse, isn't it?
Not always.
Well, don't go looking at me. I hardly knew the woman. You should speak to his assistant, Ruth Lessing. She knows all there is to know. Whether she tell you or not's a different matter.
Geoffrey strolls towards the back exit of the football grounds. He stops by an entrance to the stadium, spotting Ruth and George, their solemn eyes downcast. Ruth puts a hand on George's arm and he strokes it. Seeing Geoffrey, Ruth whisks her hand away.
Any luck with the nightclub?
Ruth looks at George. Kate, Geoffrey and Ruth are at the club.
So, where did Rosemary sit?
Here.
And Barton and Faraday?
There and here.
If you could draw a plan...
A flashback. Willowy, elegant Rosemary sits between George and Stephen at the table in the nightclub as George raises his glass in a toast.
There must have been a period when the table was unattended.
Yes, there was. Whilst we were dancing, the waiters cleared it.
And you remember no one apart from guests and staff coming near the table?
No. I was watching from over there. There was no one.
A male and a female waiter clear the table, leaving only the wine glasses. Later, Rosemary rises from her seat. Iris looks concerned as Rosemary starts to choke and sinks to the floor, clutching her throat.
It happened so quickly, but it seemed to go on forever. I'd never actually seen anyone die before. And like that, in such pain.
Stephen looks at Alexandra. George's swept back hair flops down over his face as he kneels over Rosemary. Ruth calls out for a doctor. Leaving the club...
Did you speak to the staff?
They've all worked here for years. Andy's checked them out. So have the police.
I'm adding Ruth to the list with Barton and Faraday.
Why?
A hunch.
You don't believe in those when I have them.
How do you get on with Iris?
She's upset. Seems genuine.
Suspect?
No. My hunch.
I need you to look into Mark Drake.
Andy's managed to get into his bank account.
In any other job, the man would be a menace.
Barton's been giving him money every month for the past 8 months.
Oh.
George stands by the football pitch, staring at Stephen, who approaches along a narrow corridor within the stands.
Mr. Faraday, I hope you're proud of yourself.
Stephen steps forward into the daylight.
This is a difficult one, George.
How dare you! How long did it go on? Weeks? Months?
That's... Please, try and be civilised.
Civilised? You've got her pregnant.
Stephen looks down.
Did you make out the abortion, George?
Love her. I wouldn't have made her do anything. But she betrayed me. You both did.
He pushes past Stephen.
Did you kill her, George?
George stops, turns, and walks back towards him. He looks him in the eye.
You have crossed me. That's a very bad idea. I've got connections. I mean real connections.
Whitechapel. Geoffrey and Kate pay Mark Drake a visit at his posh flat.
Well, this is very nice, isn't it? London property. So expensive these days.
Yes, certainly is.
Paid for in part by George Barton?
His choice, not mine.
Why would he be so generous?
It was Rosie's idea. We were very close. My mother brought us up together after Rosemary's parents died. It was her way of rewarding me for being such a good cousin. More of a brother, really.
But Rosemary had her own fortune. Surely she could have supported you without asking for her husband's help.
I could never have done that. Barton was another matter.
Why weren't you at the dinner with the others?
I wasn't invited. Barton doesn't like me. I don't like him much. Brash, crude, nouveau. For whatever reason, Rosemary married beneath her. I loved her, but I don't have to mix in his company.
Tight-lipped, Mark sits down. He looks at them and takes a breath.
Rosie tried to kill herself twice before, you know.
Why would she do that?
I thought it was out of loneliness, feeling abandoned. I could understand that. But I never thought she'd go through with it. She was lovely, Rosie. I'll miss her.
Geoffrey and Kate leave the building.
What do you make of him?
I bet he doesn't win at the tables. Well, two more to go. But if, as you say, Alexandra didn't know about the affair...
And if Lucilla's the sweet person everyone says she is, no more suspects. And knowing how you love the company of women and loathe computers, I'll go back to the office and check on the boy Wonder.
A black cab rolls by a tall black fence enclosing a park opposite stately buildings. Lincoln's Inn, Alexandra Faraday's chambers. Inside, Geoffrey climbs a broad spiral staircase from the lobby.
I guessed months ago.
He eavesdrops on Stephen and Alexandra.
Please, can we go into your room?
I don't want you near me.
What do you think I'm going to do?
You're supposed to say sorry. How could you do this to me?
Shh.
To my family?
It wasn't deliberate.
You mean you didn't have a choice?
Just happen. Now, please, can we go into your office?
All you ever wanted from me was money. Or should I say position?
Don't say that.
Rosemary was nothing but a selfish, rich, uneducated piece of trash. She deserved everything she got.
Christ, you didn't kill her.
Don't be ridiculous, Stephen.
She pulls away sharply and strides off up a flight of stairs. Stephen gets in a lift with oak-panelled walls. Geoffrey approaches the stairs.
Mrs. Faraday...
She turns and looks down at Geoffrey.
It's Miss Lawrence, actually.
Oh, yes, of course. My apologies. My name is Rhys. I work for McCain in the PM's office. We met briefly the other morning at your home.
I've just returned from a couple of days away from the office. I've got rather a lot to catch up on, I'm afraid.
I was just wondering how well you knew Mrs. Barton.
Hardly at all. My husband and I met her at a few functions and at the dinner that night, of course.
Perhaps your husband knew her better than you?
She wasn't part of his world. My husband lives for politics. He works 24 hours a day.
She bites her bottom lip as she walks away. Geoffrey looks pensive and strolls off past framed portrait paintings on the stairwell. Wearing his beige coat and a dark brown trilby, Geoffrey approaches Lucilla's house. Inside, he sits beside her on a stripy sofa and sips tea.
I should have taken better care of her, been more watchful. But she had George, money, beauty, and my poor Mark had such a difficult time. Do try one of the biscuits, they simply melt in your mouth. His father abandoned us when Mark was only 5, you know. He had to be my first priority. Poor Rosemary.
If it was murder...
But who?
Oh.
He stares fixedly at Lucilla, who banishes a troubled expression with a smile.
Well, at least there is one bright light on the horizon.
There is?
Iris and Fiers are getting married.
Geoffrey looks away thoughtfully and bites a biscuit. At Lotus Fitness, a kickboxing trainer holds up padded gloves for athletic, shaven-headed Fizz to punch. Fizz wallops them. His mobile phone rings and he whips off his boxing gloves to take the call.
What is it, George?
You and Iris.
Who told you?
Onto a nice little earner, aren't you? Am I not paying you enough?
It's none of your business, mate.
Keep away.
Are we done? Because I'm in the middle of training.
I heard you refuse to take the latest drug test.
I'm on a prescription.
That what they're calling it these days? Mess with Iris, you're finished.
Fizz spars with his trainer, landing heavy punches and kicks on the padded training gloves. Geoffrey strolls up to Kate at HQ as she puts her coat on to leave.
Another suspect? Lucilla.
Alexandra Faraday.
Oh. So, there's the two Faradays.
And Barton.
He knew too?
He said not, but man's an international mogul. He conducts deceit on a global scale. Who knows what he's hiding?
I really loved her, Colonel. You can scratch me off the list.
And Ruth Lessing? She seems to be in love with Barton.
She told you?
It's the way she looks at him.
Oh, that doesn't mean anything. Women look at men like that all the time.
Do they?
Yes, it eases off his tension. Anyway, she's the obvious suspect.
She is?
Well, she's dowdy and she wears specs. They're always the obvious suspects, especially if true beauty lurks behind the disguise.
Fizz?
Neither Lucilla nor Fizz seems to have a motive, but who knows what secrets they're hiding. At least you say Iris's grief seemed genuine.
Outside.
Rosemary's will.
Where on earth did you get that?
Our whiz kid. If Rosemary died without having children, all her fortune went to Iris.
Oh.
Now, Iris knew Rosemary was pregnant, but she was shocked when I told her about the abortion. If she really didn't know, then she had every reason to kill her sister. I was so happy for her. But that's why I know she couldn't have killed herself. Which brings the number of suspects up to 5.
6, actually. Fizz. According to Lucilla, Fizz and Iris are about to marry.
Quick murder, make her an heiress.
Yep.
They enter a supermarket.
Actually, we could add Drake to the list, just to make a prime number.
No. His cash machine and credit card transactions put him in Jerry's at the time of the murder. That's a casino in Belgravia.
Anybody could have been using them.
Yes. Which is why we're checking the CCTV footage.
You said they don't have cameras inside clubs like that.
They do outside. Do you want stuffing with your chicken?
Yes.
She's doing a shop. Jeffrey grabs a big packet of sweets.
For Sam?
Kate pays at the checkout.
Too many suspects. We need a break. And those will rot your teeth.
He's munching the sweets. He answers his mobile.
Hello? Oh, yes, Miss Lessing.
He frowns.
Barton's doing what?
At George's.
Who the hell do you think you are, telling me what to do?
Reenacting dinner at the club just doesn't seem to be such a wise idea.
I want to know who killed my wife.
You can leave that to us.
And what do you have? Nothing. No forensics, no proof, nothing.
We're interviewing all the suspects.
Nobody makes a fool of me, but I'll tell you this. By tonight, I'm going to find out who murdered my wife.
Kate and Jeffrey share a despairing look. Stephen is driven up outside his house, where a gaggle of journalists awaits him.
Stand back, please.
No comment to make. No comment.
I'll have a statement for you, sure.
A policeman holds the press back as he enters his house.
I understand, Prime Minister. Thank you. And please give my love to the family.
Alexandra comes off the phone.
He says he'll take me back into government within a year. Maybe less. People have come back sooner after doing more.
She starts across the room.
I love you.
She stops and looks at him.
It's all right, Stephen. I'm not going anywhere. Not for a while, anyway. As the PM so succinctly put it, if I walk out now, I lose the moral high ground.
She turns away.
At least my father chose well when he chose him. Mind you, I'm the one who chose you.
I love you, Alex.
She turns to face him.
It took that stupid affair to realise how much.
How did the PM find out?
He closes his eyes.
Barton told McCain.
She shakes her head.
Good old George. He rang an hour ago. He wants us at the club for dinner tonight.
Where she died?
She raises her eyebrows.
Is he mad?
This is crazy.
George never does anything without a plan.
This dinner is sick. Same clothes, same menu.
I swore I'd never wear this again.
She examines a dress in the mirror.
Well, maybe you don't have to. Maybe you and I could just stay here.
We have to go, Fizz. Whatever George has got planned, it's about what happened to Rosemary.
She holds the garment against her chest on its hanger and regards herself in the mirror. Fizz rubs his head anxiously. 3 slender women wearing only their underwear stand before George in his living room. One resembles Rosemary, the others less so.
I want one of you to be at the party tonight, to stand in for my wife.
He points at the tall, raven-haired girl resembling Rosemary.
I'll have you. Need to do something with the air.
To Mark.
It is wrong, this dinner. Wrong, wrong.
I know.
She should never have married that man. I always said she was too good for him.
I seem to remember that she was too good for everyone else as well.
The man is insane.
George is upset. I'm sure he has his reasons.
You're too kind. Why do you stick up for him? Especially after the way he's treated you.
I'm not defending him. It's just that... grief affects us all in different ways.
Once she's buried, we'll have nothing more to do with him.
He smiles warmly.
I'll look after you.
She smiles and nods. At George's house, Ruth picks up a framed photograph of Rosemary and looks at it. George enters.
Ruth.
She puts it down.
Those photos. Do something with them, will you? I don't know. Put them away.
She turns to him.
Are you sure about this dinner tonight?
Oh, don't question me about it!
She looks hurt. He lowers his eyes briefly.
I'm sorry, sweetheart.
She looks down and he steps forward.
I don't know where I'd be without you.
A hopeful smile plays on her lips as she returns his gaze. George eyes her and walks away. Her smile fades. Lucilla descends her stairs in a red dress.
This is dreadful. Quite dreadful.
You'll be absolutely fine. Iris will look after you.
Mark helps her into a fur-trimmed coat. Iris looks at Mark.
I miss her.
Iris is glammed up with red lipstick on.
I miss her too. We all do.
Lucilla gestures to Iris and Mark follows them downstairs as they go to leave.
Try not to worry.
On Jeffrey's TV.
But finally, I'd just like to say I regret any embarrassment I've caused my government, my constituency, but most importantly, my wife and our families. Thank you.
Kate turns off the TV with a remote and goes through to the study where Sam is playing a computer game on the internet. Kate hurries over to him with a shocked expression.
What are you doing?
You said it was all right.
I never said you... How did you get on?
Don't worry. I couldn't get in the encrypted files.
We're going to be late. I thought you said the computer was safe.
Don't worry. Sam can't get into the encrypted files.
Oh, school not covered that yet.
Now, Sam, you mustn't ever touch this computer again. Do you understand? This is Grandad's and it's very precious to him.
Sam storms out of the room in a huff. Kate sits down.
How much do you think he knows?
It's a preschool website, for God's sake.
He's mad.
It'll be over soon.
Kate, Jeffrey and Andy watch from a mezzanine table in the nightclub as Ruth shuffles over to George at the bar.
Look at Ruth. Maybe she's in this with Barton.
Where's she going?
She walks off up some steps. Alexandra approaches George.
George. I'm truly sorry for your loss.
You're an intelligent woman. I need to dump him.
She slinks off. Frowning, George stares down the bar. Stephen strolls up behind George and looks askance at him as he passes. Wine is poured for George and his guests who sit at the same table they were at on the night of the murder. Andy, Kate and Jeffrey watch from their table on the mezzanine.
Rosemary.
Andy listens.
I have made mistakes.
He's bugged their table and wears an earpiece.
She was the love of my life.
Kate and Jeffrey listen also.
Well done, Andy.
Andy nods. George stands up at the table and raises a glass of white wine. The others rise from their seats also.
To truth.
They raise their glasses reluctantly. Kate and Jeffrey watch intently as Iris takes a small sip. Slight, sharp-featured Ruth wears a sparkly cardigan and round-rimmed glasses. She looks at George and slowly raises her glass to her mouth. She too takes a small sip. Attractive, statuesque Alexandra sips her wine, then sharp-suited Fizz sips his. He looks at glamorous old Lucilla, her flaxen hair set in an immaculate beehive, gold earrings gleaming. She takes a sip of her wine and licks her lips. Stephen pauses to consider, then takes a large mouthful of his wine. Kate, Andy and Jeffrey watch from their high vantage. George rises from his seat. couples dance and chat amiably on the nearby dance floor as a live jazz band plays. George's awkward guests sit around the table, staring somberly into space.
Dance, Mrs. Faraday.
No, thank you.
He stares at her, his eyes narrowed, the corners of his mouth downturned.
Well, yes, thank you.
She stands up.
All of you. Dance.
Ruth, Fizz and Lucilla each stand, Stephen remains seated.
I couldn't possibly.
Stephen stares at the table, then stands up.
Do you really think one of them's the murderer?
Barton, if he knew about the affair.
He just said he loved her.
Some people are very good at telling lies, even to themselves.
Iris wears an elegant, tight-fitting, sleeveless dress. She sits back down. Her handbag is on the table, one place to the left of her seat. She puts it on her lap. Lucilla is seated.
This is so cruel, George. I won't stay here a moment longer.
She stands, but George raises a hand and she sits again.
Just one more toast. Raise your glasses. Go on, then.
They all stand up. Ruth looks at George.
To Rosemary.
The lights go out as they sip their wine. A flickering spotlight comes on, illuminating Rosemary's stand-in.
Oh, my God! Jesus! Oh. Sick, George.
Ruth looks impassive.
Very funny, George.
George, this is evil.
Come on, George.
George sips his wine, then suddenly starts trembling and leans against the table in panic.
No! George! George! Stephen!
A look of desperation overcomes him, and he gapes as hands pull at his bow tie and try to loosen his collar. The faces of his guests swim before him as he looks around in a panic. He grimaces and pulls at his tie, then collapses face first on the table. Kate and Geoffrey are with McCain in his office.
How the bloody hell did this happen? Didn't you see anything?
No.
Barton gave money to the party. Without donors like him, he wouldn't have made it back into office.
What was in it for him?
Well, let's just say the potential for scandal has shot up several notches. I want this sorted out.
This is now a damage limitation exercise.
And I don't want any more dead bodies. Understood?
Kate and Geoffrey ride through London in a black cab.
Oh, Kate, do you remember the old days? Berlin Wall.
Russian spy. Cambridge defectors.
Political assassinations. Libya. At least there was some dignity in that. Maybe we're just getting old.
Not old. Older.
They've put us out to pasture, that's what's happened.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Football. Scrap metal millionaires.
Listen, who is it that the British politician fears most?
The electorate?
No, Angel. The British press. Any government in its right mind would run a mile from it.
Some people have been known to pursue it to Australia.
We're vital, Geoffrey.
Old and vital. Sounds like a shampoo.
The cab motors down a residential street at HQ.
The tox screen report's come back. It shows potassium cyanide in Barton's champagne, just like Rosemary's. Who stands to gain from killing both Rosemary and Barton?
Mrs. Faraday might have wanted Rosemary dead, but she'd have no reason to kill Barton.
And Faraday may have had reason to kill them both, but he's much too intelligent to do anything so stupid.
Ruth was in love with Barton.
That look again.
The scream over the body. And while Fizz may have disliked him, he'd no discernible motive for murder.
So, we're left with a devoted aunt and a grieving sibling.
Both unlikely. Back to square one, with double the body count.
First too many suspects.
Now none.
Barton's will.
Oh, what took you so long?
I couldn't get into his system. But his solicitor isn't so careful.
He changed his will just after Rosemary's death.
So soon?
Rich men are meticulous about their affairs.
Actually, if it's all right with you, could I...
Oh, yes, yes, and off you go.
Good night.
And he goes.
Oh, actually, we should do the same. I'm exhausted.
She cocks her head.
Why is it that your green fingers never extend beyond the garden?
A dying pot plant behind his desk.
To give you something to do? Would you believe it? The bulk of his estate goes into a trust for schools in the Third World. Barton the philanthropist.
Mm. It hardly offsets a lifetime of exploitation.
He's left Lucilla, the house she lives in, a fair bit of cash, and the remainder, quite a considerable fortune, actually, goes to Iris.
Fizz is with Iris at her flat. She regards herself in a mirror.
I keep seeing his face. George. How he looked when he died.
And it makes you think of Rosemary. Me too.
He steps up behind her and puts a hand on her shoulder.
I'm so sorry.
I'm scared, Fizz. Everything is getting out of control.
I know. But it's over.
Is it?
Outside Lucilla's.
I wouldn't mind having a nephew-in-law left me a house.
I wouldn't mind having a daughter who finished hers.
You'll miss them when they're gone.
Geoffrey gives her a wry look and rings Lucilla's doorbell. Inside...
I think my mother's had enough.
We won't be long.
Did you notice anyone come near the table last night? A stranger who could have put something in Barton's drink? Or know of anyone who wanted him dead?
That is enough.
If you don't mind.
Well, George had many enemies. He wasn't a very nice man, even to people who had done him no harm, like Mark.
Oh, sorry to be a nuisance, but I couldn't have some more hot water in this, could I?
Of course, darling.
Mark sighs heavily and leaves the room. Kate turns to Lucilla.
So, Barton never gave your son anything?
What sort of things? Money? Of course not.
Can you think of anyone who might have wanted both Barton and Rosemary dead?
She shakes her head.
No.
Iris? Or Mr. Fitzgerald, perhaps?
Oh, never! Ruth? She's been loyal to him for years.
Or the Faradays?
Oh, he's far too intelligent. His wife's a QC. Well, they could weather infidelity, but... murder?
Do you know the terms of Mr. Barton's will?
No.
He's left Iris a considerable inheritance, and you, this house... and a rather large sum of money.
Lucilla turns to look at Mark, who has entered with a fine china teapot. He calmly sets it down on the table. Geoffrey puts his hat on as he and Kate leave the house.
It's odd that she didn't know about Barton's payments to Drake. Maybe it was blackmail.
If it was, the last thing Drake would want is Barton's death. His money's just turned up.
In future... if you want to talk to my mother, go through me.
Why didn't you tell her Barton was giving you money?
Rosie didn't want her to know. I respected that.
Kate answers her phone.
Where were you last night?
I was at Jerry's casino until Mother rang about George. You can ask, there are plenty of witnesses. I had no reason to kill Barton, Colonel. Quite the opposite, in fact.
Geoffrey joins Kate on the street.
Okay, that's good. That was Hoffman. Iris is at the gym.
Hardly the act of the grief-stricken.
Well, she did the same the day after her sister died. Could be classic displacement activity.
Could be classic covering up.
Unfortunately, I was rather hard on her.
You want me to talk to her?
Yes.
She would have spotted me last night at the club.
Nah, not in all that confusion. Pity exercise is a problem, or you could pose as a client.
Exercise isn't a problem.
Really?
I thought personal trainers were booked up months in advance.
Well,
Andy says a space has just come free.
Seth. Only 5 more. 4?
Jeffrey's doing sit-ups at Lotus 3. Fitness.
No, I really don't think I
can. You can do it, Mr. Johnson. Come on, okay? 2. Nearly there. 1. Well done. Okay. 20 minutes on the treadmill and you're done.
He quaffs bottled water.
Right, don't let your heart rate drop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Iris escorts an exhausted-looking Jeffrey to a treadmill where he plods along at a steady pace, hunched over the handrails. He looks at Iris.
I know who you are. I'm sure I recognise the face. First your sister died, didn't she? Then her husband. Surely they left you a lot of money.
I don't know anything about any money. You're press, aren't you?
She turns up the treadmill and it propels him off. Andy pops into Kate's office at HQ.
Can I have a word?
Sure.
It's not about work or anything. Actually, no, that's exactly what it is about. Whenever I start getting serious about somebody, she asks me what I do, and then when I lie, she sees straight through me. She then decides, well, if I'm prepared to lie about that, then I'm probably lying about everything else. And it turns out that women don't want to go out with men who lie all the time.
It's one of the hazards of undercover work.
Yeah. Why do they always know?
Because you're telling them.
You've lost me.
You see, spotting a lie isn't just feminine intuition. It's all about body language. People pick up on the tiniest details. Quite subconsciously, it can be avoiding eye contact or nervous fidgeting. Anything.
So, is there a way you can teach me how to lie without getting caught?
I suppose there are techniques.
Jeffrey appears in the corridor at her office window.
Maybe later.
Jeffrey returns home to find that Kate has prepared a plate of sandwiches.
Nothing from Iris. I'm bungled, Matt. And if I die of a heart attack, it'll be your fault.
You silly old bugger.
I'm quite serious.
Tea?
We're back. The wiring's progressing nicely, but Sam's a little bit worried about his room. He says it looks like Swiss cheese.
Tea, Bex? Oh, lovely. Cup of tea, Sam.
3 sugars. And Mummy, hurry up, my program's starting.
Kate stirs tea.
Give me a hand, Sam.
Yeah.
His toy robot spins noisily on the table as he goes over to Kate. It walks off the edge and Jeffrey catches it. He puts it back on the table.
Thanks, Granny.
Sam takes a plate over to the table.
Mom, it's starting.
Okay.
He goes through to the next room. Kate sips a cuppa.
Oh, sugar.
Oh, my fault. Sorry, that's Sam's. I saw Sam's toy and I thought that's where he was sitting.
They swap mugs and Rebecca leaves the room. Kate and Jeffrey share a look.
Iris's handbag.
Iris's handbag.
Suppose the poison wasn't intended for Barton at all.
We've been racking our brains trying to work out who had a motive for killing both Rosemary and Barton. Her handbag must have fallen off her chair.
Yes, and one of the waiters picked it up and put it back in the wrong place.
At some point, the poison glass was substituted.
Using the handbag as a marker.
So the sparkling cyanide was meant for Iris.
Why? I'll tell Andy to search for her will.
Don't you remember? If Iris dies before probate, all Rosemary's estate goes to Lucilla.
Lucilla, Lucilla. But would she have known about the will?
We do. And if she knew about Iris, she probably knew that Rosemary had to die without children for Iris to inherit.
No, she loved the girls.
She was abandoned by her husband, lived alone on dwindling money. Rosemary inherited a fortune, had George. Iris was beautiful, about to marry. Resentment, jealousy, greed. Your territory.
I think if we're going to go down the family line, my money's on Mark Drake.
He has an alibi. But if we're right about the rest, it means one thing.
Iris is in danger.
At Iris's?
I don't believe you.
If George Barton's death was a mistake, somebody clearly wants to kill you.
But why would anyone want to hurt me?
You have inherited quite a lot of money.
But I haven't made out a will. Who's going to want to kill me if I haven't done that?
Well, Lucilla Drake.
Well, that's ridiculous. Aunt Lucilla couldn't hurt a fly. She has been like a mother to me. I'm not listening to this.
Iris, even if it isn't Lucilla, you're clearly in danger.
We'd like you to come with us just until this is all over.
Fizz will take care of me. Now, I'd like you to leave.
So much for the powers of persuasion.
I'll arrange surveillance.
Pick up, Fizz. It's me. You won't believe what's just happened, okay? Just ring me as soon as you get this.
At Lucilla's.
But who would want to kill her?
Someone who stands to gain from her death, from the death of both of your nieces.
I don't know who that could be.
You don't think my mother had something to do with this, do you?
When Rosemary died childless, her money went to Iris. If Iris dies before probate, all the money goes to Mrs. Drake.
But why would I want money? I already have a bequest from George.
But Barton's death was a mistake.
No, this is ridiculous. You're not seriously suggesting...
And the intended victim of the second killing was Iris.
Lucilla closes her eyes, then looks at Geoffrey.
When their parents died, I took those girls in. I fed them, clothed them, put a roof over their head, helped them with their homework when I could. I brought them up and loved them as though they were my own. Are you going to stand there?
I want you to leave.
I don't care. I couldn't kill them. I wouldn't kill them.
You must understand, 9 million is a large amount of money.
Please, I would like you to go.
Lucilla hurries off. Mark glares at them.
You heard her. Leave us alone. Go on!
Lucilla pokes her head out from the stairs to watch as Geoffrey and Kate leave. Mark closes the door, forcing Kate out.
Oh, this is becoming a bit of a habit. You know, I'm with Iris on this. I don't think Lucilla did it.
Now you tell me. So, who stands to gain?
Well, Lucilla. And Drake, of course.
Lucilla and
yes.
Drake?
But Lucilla isn't the type, and Drake was gambling in Jerry's club at the time.
And how do we know that?
From the CCTV footage outside the club.
Kate, we really need your whiz kid to be wrong.
The scanner scans a photo of Drake into the computer.
Andy does this. It appears on a monitor.
You see, every person in the world has a unique set of facial measurements. The computer then memorizes those measurements. Then, no matter what Drake does to disguise himself, if he wears a hat or grows a beard, the computer will recognize him, even from only a fragment of the face. Here's the footage of the night of Rosemary's murder.
Security footage of the entrance to Jerry's club.
Here's Mark Drake going in. Computer zooms in on the face, identifies and logs the facial characteristics, and picks him up, leaving Jerry's casino.
At 23:31, just as he said.
And this is the footage of the night of George Barton's murder. Here's Mark Drake again. The system has picked him up on his way into Jerry's casino. The time is 19:51. Now, the next time the camera records him, he's leaving the casino at 23:45.
Again, just as he said. What about another exit?
They're alarmed, and no alarms went off on either night.
She purses her lips.
What if he disabled the alarm?
Andy smiles.
Leave it with me.
He taps keys on the computer. A sunny day. Wearing a grey miniskirt and a sleeveless leopard print top, Iris sits on the sofa in her flat. She looks up as if she's heard something, then continues reading a magazine. The noise makes her jump. She looks up anxiously and her eyes dart left and right. She walks slowly through her living room door and climbs the stairs. A shadow is thrown onto the magnolia wall as she creeps nervously onto the landing by her bedroom. She steals into her spacious, empty room and glances around wide-eyed. She goes to the sash window and looks out at the street below. A man in a long black jacket stands facing her flat on the pavement opposite. Iris picks up a cordless telephone and dials a number.
Please, Fizz.
Where are you? Ring me, Fizz, please. I'm frightened.
Wearing a black and white striped scarf and a long red coat, Iris leaves her flat via the back door and trots up an alleyway towards the street. She gingerly peers round the corner at the man in the black jacket. He doesn't see her. Out of sight in the alley, she makes a mobile phone call.
Hi, it's me, Iris. Can I come over? Please. It is really important. Thank you.
She pokes her head out as the surveillance guy looks down to light a cigarette. She breaks cover and runs. At HQ.
You were right. He obviously left the club through a back entrance without setting off the alarm. I tried all the CCTV cameras near Jerry's casino and picked him up 100 metres away. Here, just after 8 o'clock on the night that Barton died. Must have thought that no one would recognise him in that scarf. Even though you can hardly see his face, the digital recognition system on the CCTV a few hundred metres away picks him up.
A green box tracks Mark across the screen on the CCTV footage as he strolls down a dark city street.
We can follow him across town as he crosses Grosvenor Street and then on the west side of Berkeley Square and here on his way to the nightclub, an hour before Barton's murder.
In an alley.
He seems to be waiting for someone there.
Now watch closely and you'll see who he's waiting for.
A blonde hurries over and throws her arms around him.
You see? It's Ruth Lessing.
So she's the one meeting Drake?
Was Drake there on the night of Rosemary's murder?
Well, as far as I can tell, he really was at Jerry's casino. She's obviously not happy about something. She must have come out of the club specifically to talk to him. It's a shame there's no sound.
She pleads with Mark, but he's forceful and assertive with her, and she relents. She shuffles off with her head hung.
But at least the footage has given us another piece of the jigsaw.
We must ring Iris. Bring her in for safekeeping.
They leave in a hurry. Iris trots up to the entrance of Mark's apartment building and pushes the buzzer for his flat.
Hello?
It's me, Iris.
Iris, darling, come on up.
Mark hangs up the entry phone. Ruth's with him.
What are you going to do?
Let her in, of course. And you're going to stay out of sight in the bathroom.
Mark.
Darling, haven't I always promised you that everything will be all right?
Oh, that was before George. No more,
of
Mark.
Of course not!
Please.
Now go on. Hide in the bathroom.
Ruth does as she's told. Mark opens the door to Iris with a smile. She enters the flat with a distant expression.
They thought Aunt Lucilla was going to hurt me.
What?
Can you believe it?
She sweeps her hair back.
When I couldn't find Fizz, I didn't know where else to go.
I'll look after you.
I know. This is so dreadful.
Yeah. It makes you quite paranoid. I even drew up my will a couple of days ago.
Whole thought of a will makes me feel sick.
You haven't made one?
No. I must. And God knows what would happen to the money if I were to die without one.
It would go to your nearest relative.
Aunt Lucilla?
Mm-hmm.
They both look thoughtful.
Tea?
Kate and Geoffrey are with Andy at HQ.
I know. There's a CCTV camera outside Drake's flat. I saw it when we were there. Can we access it?
Yes.
He brings five cameras up on screen.
Drake's place.
You can, what's the word?
Call up.
Call up images from CCTV cameras anywhere in London.
Anywhere in the world.
But you need police clearance.
Well, if you've got the right gear, you can even pinpoint somebody in a room in disguise from a satellite hundreds of miles in space. Between CCTV and credit card transactions, there's no privacy left.
It's diabolical.
Let me call up some earlier footage.
The entrance of Mark's apartment block.
Iris.
Hmm.
So she's still in there?
Yes.
Ring the police and get us a car.
Thank you.
There you go.
Did I tell you your mother came to see me?
No.
She wanted to make sure I was going to take care of you.
She shouldn't have done that.
Yes, she should. We're a family. Mark, I want to help.
Mark broods.
Your tea'll be getting cold.
Oh.
She puts it down.
I should tell you. Viz and I are going to be married.
That's wonderful news. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She goes to sip her tea.
Don't touch it! Ruth, why are you here?
Ruth stares dumbly, mouth agape. Iris looks at wavy-haired Mark, who meets her gaze without expression. Her face registers grim realization. Mark shoots Ruth a look.
I'm sorry, I thought... You thought it was poisoned.
Mark looks away. Iris narrows her eyes.
But we're family.
No, Mother and I were a family till you and Rosemary turned up and spoilt it all. The least you could all do is take care of me.
Rosemary loved you.
She never shared her money.
She wanted to. Grandfather's will wouldn't allow it.
She could have found a way, but she didn't. So I did. I was desperate and she knew it.
Mark, what are we going to do?
Arrange a suicide. Bring her coat.
No, please. Mark.
Bring her coat.
No, don't. Please don't. Please don't.
Get the door. Come on.
Get off me!
Get the door.
I'm not going! Get off me! Get off me!
She breaks free and Ruth shuts him on the other side of the flat's door. He barges back in.
What are you doing?
He shakes Ruth angrily, glowers at her and strides off after Iris. Ruth trembles, her bottom lip quivering as she sinks to the floor. Kate and Jeffrey hurtle through the streets in an unmarked car with a flashing light on the roof. Kate hurries down a fire escape at the rear of Mark's flat, with Mark in close pursuit. He grabs her arm, but she throws him off and runs. He picks himself up and follows. Jeffrey's behind the wheel of the speeding vehicle. He overtakes a hatchback and accelerates. Mark chases Iris up an alley towards the street. Jeffrey's car blocks the exit. Mark turns to run back, but three uniformed police officers apprehend him. They cuff his hands behind his back and march him away. Iris cries on Kate's shoulder. She pulls away and stares back at Mark, then Kate and Jeffrey walk her to the car. New Scotland Yard. Jeffrey watches through a two-way mirror as Kate interviews Ruth.
What on earth had he promised you?
The world. I'd have done anything for him. Well, I did, didn't I?
A flashback. Ruth smiles bashfully as Mark removes her glasses and regards her.
You're beautiful. Do you know that?
Don't be silly.
And much too modest.
She closes her eyes as Mark nuzzles her neck.
George should take better care of you.
Her eyes open.
George is all right.
He gazes into her eyes, then kisses her tenderly on the lips.
I knew it was too good to be true.
Then he asked you to poison Rosemary.
It was easy.
Ruth shakes her head.
I just slipped a little potassium cyanide into her glass when no one was looking.
The substance fizzes in the wine glass. Ruth sets it down.
I never realised the death would be so dreadful.
And Barton?
I put the poison glass in what I thought was Iris's place. I don't understand what happened.
Iris's bag was dropped on the floor. And then it was put back in Barton's place by mistake.
When Iris came back to the table, she picked up a bag and she sat down in her place.
I told Mark I couldn't do it. But he met me outside the club and told me that if I didn't do it, he'd tell the police about the first murder. Well, I thought I'd got away with that. So I had no choice. But today, when Iris arrived...
She looks down dolefully.
I just couldn't do it. No more. No more.
But Barton gave Drake regular monthly payments.
He had huge gambling debts. Said his life was in danger. But George refused to increase his allowance. Mark said that left him no choice. He had to get his hands on Rosemary's money. Mark knew that Rosemary would leave the money to Iris and that Iris would leave it to his mother.
Geoffrey and Kate watch as an officer interviews Mark.
Even if George's death was a mistake, he got what he deserved. And the girls? Well, they just kept getting in my way.
Mark stares off, tight-lipped and pensive, then blinks and looks at the officer. Mark leans forward with a hint of a smile.
My mother's such a silly woman. She'll do anything for me.
In the gents' toilets at HQ, Andy talks to himself in the mirror.
An airline pilot. Oh, no, that's dreadful. I work in IT.
He sighs, frowns, and draws a breath.
I work for a secret government department.
Why do you want to learn to lie effectively?
So I can have a relationship that lasts longer than a week.
And what's the job that you tell these women that you do?
I work for a computer firm processing insurance claims.
See, there you are, you see, you lied. Your body stiffened and you went to cross your arms, your eyes flicked away and then you held my gaze too firmly. And that little triangle between your eyebrows, that twitched, that's called your Darwin grief muscle.
Well, can I stop it?
You can, I mean, people do, but...
But I'm not allowed to tell anyone what I do, so...
But when you have a long-term relationship, you can, and she gets vetted.
And until then?
And until then, you practice lying until you no longer betray the signals. Or you convince yourself that what you know to be a lie is really the truth.
You can do that?
Well, you can if you're an actor. Or a psychopath. Like Ruth Lessing and Mark Drake. But in the end, neither could hide the truth.
And you remember no one apart from guests and staff coming near the table?
No. I was watching from over there. There was no one.
Another flashback.
She was lovely, Rosie. I'll miss her.
Iris and Fizz lie in bed together beneath a black duvet. He kisses the bridge of her nose and gives her a squeeze.
Let's get married as soon as possible. Yeah?
She beams. Yeah. To McCain.
Let's hope that Fizz loves her more for herself than her money.
Lucilla won't do too badly either. At least Mark Drake won't be around to spend her money for her. I suppose that's a kind of justice.
And nothing to embarrass the party or the PM.
Reputations are safe. Unless you know something we don't. Actually, there is one thing that still puzzles me.
I know. Rosemary's abortion. If she really wanted children, why didn't she just have the baby? Whoever the father was.
Perhaps she didn't really want children.
I think she was afraid. I don't think she and Barton had slept together for a very long time.
Maybe she was going to leave Barton.
Will the PM let Faraday back into the government?
Not if Alexandra divorces him.
Maybe he can woo her back. Fortunate for him that politicians tell such convincing lies.
Or perhaps he really does love her.
Thank you. They found the murderer. Ruth, put up to it by a cousin of Rosemary's, Mark Drake.
Ignoring him, Alexandra writes at the living room table.
I'm sorry, Alex. For everything.
She stops writing and stares down.
I can only say I'm sorry.
Her eyes glisten as she looks up.
You were never in love with me. You only ever cared about your career.
Maybe. In the beginning.
He meets her sorrowful gaze with an inscrutable expression, then takes a deep breath.
All right. Yes. In the beginning.
Her face crumples and she looks away.
Please don't cry.
Her eyes are clenched shut. He puts his hands on her shoulders.
There's no reason for you to believe me when I tell you that I love you, but I do.
And when did you discover that? When the PM sacked you?
Stop it. When I realised what I was doing was hurting you. You're an amazing woman. I don't want to imagine being without you. You've become part of me.
Why should I believe you, Stephen?
She looks down at the table.
I never said I loved you when it was a lie.
She meets his gaze.
I'm saying it now because it's true. I love you, Alex. Can we try again?
She lowers her eyes. At Geoffrey's, Rebecca joins Geoffrey and Kate in the living room.
The rascal's in bed.
Uh-huh.
So, how was your day?
Boring.
Boring?
Well, mine was an absolute nightmare. The guttering is absolutely useless.
I think we may have a little spy in the making.
And what are you doing out of bed?
Sam plods in, eyes down.
I know. Why doesn't Grandad read you a story?
Sam smiles from ear to ear and nods. Geoffrey sits by the fire with Sam, reading from a book.
The mole had been working very hard all the morning, spring cleaning his little home. First with brooms, then with dusters, then on ladders and steps and chairs, with a brush and a pail of whitewash, till he had dust in his throat and eyes, and splashes of whitewash all over his black fur, and an aching back and weary arms. Spring was moving in the air above and in the earth below and around him, penetrating even his dark and lowly little house with its spirit of divine discontent and...
Kate hands Geoffrey a glass of sparkling white wine. He sniffs it and regards it suspiciously, then shares a look with Kate before sipping it and setting it down on the coffee table.
With its spirit of divine discontent and longing.
The bubbly wine sparkles in the firelight. ITFC audio description.